The Guardian.
Hi, Hannah Devlin here. Before you get started with this edition of Science Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
There's enough energy in a slice of cake to walk a mile.
Socially awkward, of unkempt appearance and hunched over a microscope, this is the stereotypical scientist that we all know well.
That piece of cake flamed up as it did because it had been soaked in liquid oxygen.
But in his new book, the Swiss immunologist Professor Bruno Lemaitre challenges this stereotype and instead points to the recent rise of the narcissist in science, for whom social status and public visibility are as important as understanding the natural world.
Throughout history, we've turned to science for solutions to all sorts of problems, big and small. For scientists, the satisfaction of understanding nature is what keeps them rooted to the lab bench or motivates them to work in sweltering jungles or a frozen ice canyon.
But is this really a new trend, or have narcissists always existed in science? And how might a rise in narcissism threaten the integrity of the subject?
There is, on the one hand, this excitement about seeing new things, but at the same time, there are pressures of real life. So researchers are, and should be, people too.
Scientific research is built on a foundation of trust. Scientists trust that the research results are valid, and society trusts that the research makes an honest attempt to describe the world accurately and without bias.
I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.
Hi, Agnieszka.
Before we delve into Bruno's theory, a quick psychology lesson.
See the questions I'm asking you?
Yeah.
This is Agnieszka Golek de Savala.
Okay. So my name is Agnieszka Golek de Savala, and I work as a senior lecturer at Goldsmiths University of London at psychology department.
We spoke to Agnieszka via Skype and started by asking her to define narcissism.
This would be a description of people who have overly positive views about themselves. But it doesn't end there, because that would also apply to some extent to people who have very high self-esteem. But narcissists also demand special and privileged treatment for themselves based on this assumption that they rise above average and they are somehow very special. This would be people who like to be looked up to, and people who are like to be admired. So there's a saying that narcissists are addicted to high self-esteem, but in fact they are addicted to admiration and recognition rather than really high self-esteem. So this is what matters most for them, that others acknowledge and recognize their greatness. So, you know, like there's this iconic image of narcissist, which comes from the Greek mythology, about this person called Narcissus. And there's an image, is this guy at the pond, self-absorbed in an image in the pond. And so this was the Freudian idea, not that narcissists love themselves so much. But it's actually quite misleading, because, you know, it would be really not such a big problem if narcissists would just stay at that pond, but they normally don't. They get out of the pond and they want everybody to admire them. So it's not just them being satisfied with having that image in front of themselves. They want to have this image in everybody's eyes. And it's supposed to be the, you know, admiring faces. It's supposed to be others acknowledging them. So they go out of their way, actually, to change others, to have them the way they like them, admiring them. And that's where the problem with narcissistic personality begins.
But Agnieszka points out that there's a difference between narcissism as a personality trait and being a narcissist.
So this is the problem with defining it really, really clearly, because when we think about narcissistic personality, we assume that it functions like a little bit like an individual difference variable. So that basically means that people will differ with respect to how much or how high level of narcissism they have, and this will be normally distributed in a population. That means that about 70% are more or less like in the around the mean, no? Because this is a mean and a one standard deviation, and everybody who excels in this feature will be the above 30%, no? There would be the ones who will respond to the narcissistic personality inventory questions with answers yes, that very often describes me. Yes, I very much agree with those sort of statements. We are really will be the people who we notice as narcissists and who create problems in interpersonal relations might be those who have those this particular feature in a large extent, or that we would describe them as high on narcissism, and that tends to correlate with their strong drive to dominate, basically to get to the high status, high privilege, and high power position by any means they find available.
So with this in mind, what role does narcissism play in science?
Hello.
This is Bruno Lemaitre.
I work in Lausanne at the École Polytechnique Fédérale of Lausanne. I'm actually a professor and I'm doing research in genetics. On the side, I read a lot about personality and human behavior and try to understand science using this type of knowledge. This is a kind of side passion, but a strong passion.
I spoke to Bruno via Skype this week. Bruno, the common stereotype of the scientist is of a nerdy figure who's more interested in solving equations than anything as trivial as their social status. But there are some good historical examples that run counter to that trend. Are there any famous historical figures that come to mind?
So you are right that the classical picture of the scientist is a modest and someone working in a kind of with a collective sense. And this is true that narcissists are not found necessarily you find them more in arts, in politics, in TV than in science. But in science, for the people that know from the inside, you rapidly face some issues with personality and you realize that science is also populated by high ego person. And in fact, many successful scientists have this type of personality, which is raising a question why they are so successful. So in the past, most of the biography of scientists focus on their accomplishment, what they did great. More and more, we see, I would say, the dark side. In the book, I have speculated that people that succeed to get a very strong recognition, like I would say sometimes affirmatory recognition, if you want, like someone like Sigmund Freud, this come from maybe some scientific skill, which can be discussed for Freud, but also a very strong narcissistic behavior. That means those people seek attention. And Freud was obsessed by recognition. He wanted to be famous. He doesn't want to know things, but one of his main motives is to be famous. He was very harsh with people that do not follow him. So he was a kind of guru, if you want. And we could speculate that some scientists which we know emerge a lot from the top are sometimes this capacity to attract the light on them.
Bruno, in your book, you claim that there's been an increase in narcissism in science. What's led you to this conclusion?
So first, the rise of narcissism has been proposed by some American psychologists like Jean Twenge. This is an explanation of a number of symptoms of our society, like the rise of individualism, a number of seduction compared to decrease of empathy, fascination for popular narcissists, and etc. So this is a kind of way to see the dark side of our society. Now, in the book, this is a question which is debated, you know, because people say, is there really a change of personality? That means we have changed because the child are not anymore treated like they used to be treated. and there is no anymore control as they used to be controlled, or is it simply that something has changed and that now to be narcissistic is very well accepted, okay, by the society. So we have not anymore any constraint because before people didn't like narcissists, but now it's okay to be narcissist. That's so the big discussion about the rise of narcissism. Now in the book, I postulated that many issues we got in science relate to narcissism.
Is the idea that narcissism is increasing globally and that it could just also be increasing in science alongside that?
Yes, this is one possibility. I cannot say, you know, I will not say that I cannot guarantee that the young scientists are more narcissists than in the past, because unfortunately many figures of the past were extremely narcissists, but there was still a kind of art of doing science. And now communication, you know, visibility has taken the lead, okay, in science. Visibility, communication has become much more important today than before. And narcissists are people that succeed to make them more visible. So I believe that the crisis we face has a link with narcissism. I cannot say if people are more narcissists. It is possible that science have attracted in the last year, notably life science, have attracted more narcissists than before. And we could also underline that, as you know, the medical study, which attract more narcissists because they are interested by title and power and money, cool, okay? So, of course, you have to realize that those type of things are speculation, but this allow to propose some kind of solution, which are a bit different sometimes.
We'll come on to some of Bruno's solutions a little later on. Before that, though, I wanted to know whether narcissists can play a beneficial role within science.
You know, narcissists are people which are attracted by situation of power, by success. And you can imagine that the motivation to do science, the passion that you put in science, can be boosted by your motivation to get ahead. Okay, so that means that a narcissist, for example, let's imagine a scientist, he start to get his first paper in Nature, he got lots of recognition, and now he knows that this is a place where he can get some public recognition. And we could imagine that if you are a narcissist, you will be really boosted. This is, I would say, a good aspect of narcissism. Another good aspect of narcissism is that sometimes they like to differentiate from the other. So this can lead to originality. Now, aspect of narcissism, which I would say cause a problem, is that, as you know, narcissists are very good networkers because they tend to use others as strategy to climb in the hierarchy. Most people have friends. When you go to a meeting, you see your friend, but narcissists tend to have useful friends, editors of journals, very important colleagues, and they all, I would say, connect to each other, and this networking has a tremendous impact in science and success. Then, of course, narcissists are also better to sell themselves because they feel that they are great and their science is great. So, in some way, they can put some shadow on, I would say, a meticulous type of scientist which is doing present his science on a fair way. And you may realize that in the past it was good to be self-critical, but now more and more science is a show where you need to demonstrate rapidly that what you do is very important and get the maximum of money, etc., etc.
I wrote an article about Bruno's ideas in The Guardian last week and was really surprised by the number of scientists who got in touch to say that they agreed narcissism was a real problem in science and that they'd witnessed it in action in their own labs. And after this short break, we'll hear Agnieszka's thoughts on the subject.
Science is also an institution, and it is run in a particular way through particular procedures. And then here, I would be probably sympathetic to this analysis.
We'll also hear why we should be worried.
You know, we are human, and as human, we are biased, I would say, by our biology to fight for situation of power. And the question is how those biases affect the objectivity of science, you know?
We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Jason Phipps here, ruler of all things podcast here at The Guardian. Just to let you know that this episode is sponsored by the good people at Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Before we kick off again, I wanted to recommend another one of our podcasts here at The Guardian. It's called Audio Long Reads and contains some of The Guardian's best journalism in the form of long read articles from the paper. Recent long reads include Simon Parkin's Ode to the FIFA video game and Thomas Meaney and Saskia Schaefer's report on a German neo-Nazi court case. To subscribe to Audio Long Reads, head to theguardian.com/podcasts or get it on your favourite podcast app.
Many researchers specifically point to the influence of their advisors and their mentors on their own successes. But sometimes those relationships are not free of conflict.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin. Before the break, we heard from Bruno Lemaitre. He was arguing that modern science is the perfect breeding ground for narcissism.
Unfortunately, many figures of the past were extremely narcissists, but there was still a kind of art of doing science. And now communication, you know, visibility has taken the lead, okay, in science.
We also heard from psychologist Agnieszka Golik-Dasavala.
I would not insult my own profession.
And I wanted to know, as a practicing scientist, what she made of Bruno's theory.
So scientists are people who prefer their opinions to be based on empirical evidence. And at some point they notice that actually maybe in some fields, in some particular questions, there is not enough empirical evidence. So they set up and they search for this evidence. That's what makes scientists. Now, you know, in a way, I told you that narcissism is normally distributed in a population. So chances are it's normally distributed in a population of scientists. So yes, there will be narcissists among scientists probably, but whether there's anything specific about science's activity, I would actually think if anything, the other way around, you know, like you should see how we elect our head of departments. It's like, no, yeah, you go. You know, I really want to do this research and I won't have time to do all of this admin. So we're not particularly prone to become leaders.
But while science is not necessarily attracting lots of narcissists into the profession, Agnieszka does think that the way science is run rewards narcissists.
Science is also an institution and it is run in a particular way through particular procedures. And then here, I would be probably sympathetic to this analysis that there is something about the way the science is kind of run that maybe makes that make this easier to happen for people who have more narcissistic feature to actually be more visible and therefore create the illusion that they somehow shape the field, you know. But I think this comes from the fact that the scientific journals and quite often the scientific institutions nowadays are profit-making institutions, and therefore they need to follow the rules of the markets. They need to be visible, you know, like all of this narcissistic sort of expectations become the policies.
There is some evidence that narcissism is growing in Western culture as a whole, but it's hard to say whether this trend is especially prominent in science. However, Bruno highlights that the rise of narcissism has some very specific and dangerous consequences for science.
You know, we are human, and as human, we are biased, I would say, by our biology to fight for situation of power. And the question is how those biases affect the objectivity of science. You know, if you are a narcissist, you may have a tendency to bias a bit your science in a way to get more success. Because, you know, you can change a bit, you can make your paper more sexy, you can improve your data even, okay? So the problem of I think this phase is relative to the objectivity of science. In the book, I discuss a lot about a philosopher which I feel close, Michael Polanyi, would always suggest that science, to sustain science, you need something broader of science, and you need a society that cultivates a number of values, and including freedom, knowledge for knowledge, etc. You might see that science do not grow everywhere. It grow well in England, it grow well in the state, it go well in a number of countries, but you need to have good science, you need to have a low level of corruption, for instance, because otherwise it's very difficult to do science.
So, and Bruno even argues that this hunger for personal glory can cloud scientists' judgment in the most serious way possible.
Let's say that misconduct, you see there is lots of evidence that indicate that narcissists, because they feel that they are special, because they tend to oversize, because they are much more attracted by success and that they can take risky behavior. And they can turn a bit their data set, they can ignore a control, and this can explain the kind of proliferation of pushy paper, also pushy paper which are, sometimes we call them sexy paper, but that do not deliver in the long term. So this is a problem about, I would say, more misconduct and narcissism. Another one is conflict of interest. You know, narcissists, because they are interested by situation of power, are less sensitive to conflict of interest.
So how can science stop itself from descending into a popularity contest where who you are matters more than your latest results?
The problem of people which are non-narcissists, let's say which are just good scientists, like maybe Sanger, who got two Nobel Prize in Cambridge about sequencing, those people have to be propelled by the other because they will not write their biography, you know. If you look, the biography of a narcissist is full of detail about his life. But so, ideally, I would have loved to have a system that allowed to propel other type of heroes in science, because science is made by a diversity of persons. And unfortunately, we tend to remind and to keep the ones which are narcissists as a big one, but there are many scientists that have contributed to science without to put their ego in the job, you know, which were just good scientists. Unfortunately, they don't like to propel themselves, and usually, let's say you are a journalist, their biography will look a bit boring to you. You will prefer the controversial nature, you see, of this type of scientist. So I think we need other models. We need scientists which are less narcissistic, if you want, which have also contributed to science a lot.
A great deal of the most important science comes in ways that no one ever could predict. Comes from supporting small projects, graduate students, independent research, people who don't have any practical application in mind, but just one thing leads to another.
Special thanks this week to Agnieszka Golik-Dusavala and Bruno Lemaitre.
Have you done any narcissism questionnaires yourself? And how did you rate on them?
I did one, and actually I was surprised that I was low, because I feel, you know, if I write a book, I am clearly someone a bit dominant, you know. My competitor will say that I am find another way to seek attention, which could be correct. When I was young, I have lots of evidence that I was rather a vulnerable one, which I have big dream, for sure. Grandiose dream, but many kids have that. But I have lots of shame. I was timid. I could not speak to girls. So I think I was more a vulnerable one. You know, narcissist, just to finish, is not a good thing. We need to have grandiose dream, but sometimes we need to be able to come back to the normal life. This is what is healthy narcissism. You get great dreams, sometimes wonderful. Sometimes you behave as a narcissist, but other times you are able to be with the other. Okay?
We'll include a link to Bruno's book, An Essay on Science and Narcissism, as well as a link to my original article, in our description on the Guardian website. I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.